Matthew 24, Mark 11, and he didn't mention it, but it would be Luke 21. Who needs Mary to tell us about the future? Marian revelations are just another form of necromancy, just as spiritually deadly as going to a medium's seance to contact one's dead relatives. Is the purpose of these discussions to imply validity to Roman Catholicism? After all, if the real Mary of the Bible were giving messages to people, it would imply that the church who venerates her has the fullness of Christian worship. As a subscriber, I am now confused as to the doctrinal stance of the program and its authors and producers. See, there's that compulsive urge to try to figure out what box I'm sitting in. Are you both Catholics or evangelical? Please don't be insulted, but discussions of Fatima send out a very mixed message. If we want to promote a general interest in upcoming changes in the world and how this underlines our need for God, how much better to discuss this with living believers who are experts in what the Bible says about this? I would rather listen to an interview with Dave Hunt, Hal Lindsey, Chuck Missler, Grant Jeffrey, or Tim LaHaye any day in preference to discussions of Mary. Kind regards. And then Thomas signed it, and his address and phone number and email, etc. This was a very good email, even though I probably agree with some things and disagree with other things. First of all, let me take a line here. But to inquire into Mary / Fatima is a red herring that conveys nothing accurate or true about the future. Yes and no. Let me give you my position on the whole Fatima issue. Catholics probably aren't going to like this, but here we go. The Fatima event did occur. It occurred on October 13, 1917, just as it was foretold in the previous apparitions of the five previous months, although 1 month the children couldn't make it there. First appearance was on May 13th of 1917, all during the time Mary told them that she would work a miracle that would be would establish the fact that she had been there. I'm going to use the word Mary, and for Protestants, we'll put it in quotes. Catholics, you can leave the quotes off, okay? We'll do some duplicitous definitions here, but it's easy to describe it this way. My point to the Protestant side of the issue is this really did happen. A, it was foretold. B, it was a tremendous spiritual event, supernatural event, that was seen by somewhere between 50 and 70,000 people up to 40 miles away from the site of the Covada area. That's point A. Okay, so we've established that. So you have to run that one through the Protestant side so they understand that whole issue. Number two, the apparition, Mary, made a series of prophecies, which did come true so far. There was World War II. That was one of them. Do you recall that? There was a prophecy that when you see the sky illuminated by a strange and unknown light, then know that a second war, greater than the one we have just finished, is about to occur. And Sister Lucy, that happened in 1939. It was a magnificent aurora borealis. It was seen as far south as North Africa. And Sister Lucy, who was in a convent in Portugal, she's still alive today in her mid to late 90s, said this is the sign that the next war is about to begin. That was correct. The Mary prophecies involved intense details about Russia. There was a third secret, which I don't believe has really been revealed yet. I believe it's all tangled up in Vatican politics, tangled up with a lot of things Malachi Martin issued. Okay, now so far, for Protestants, I would seem to be giving some validity to Mary at Fatima. And as far as an event, I am giving validity to that. The other thing that should have raised flags for Protestants is understanding the prophecies of Ezekiel about Gog and Magog and Russia and Israel and the end times. There's an overlap here. So regardless of what the source of the vision is, you have to ask yourself, pray tell, what is going on here? Now, on to my belief of the whole thing. I believe the visions were demonic.
Michael, I will, you know, when you're ready to go, I'll make some sort of a hand sign to you.
Okay.
Now just follow the music, musical direction.
welcome this evening to Radio Liberty and the opening show of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz's radio program. We're coming to you today from Santa Cruz County, specifically SoCal on the central coast of California, overlooking the beautiful ocean and nestled up into the beautiful redwood forests that reign above our oceans here in Santa Cruz. We're here tonight to talk about the issues of liberty and the threats that American liberty is facing. But before we begin, I want to welcome some new stations to the Radio Liberty Network that's airing here this evening in Chicago and Flint, Michigan, Albany, New York, Utica, New York, and Fort Wayne, Indiana. So with our audience up in eastern Washington and here in Santa Cruz, we say good evening and long live freedom. That'll become the motto of our Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show, because we've been here for a long period of time seeing a political economic system come into our town and destroy piece by piece the institutions upon which freedom are built. And what we've been able to do at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is explore around the country and find other communities. Actually, it's every community. It is your community. But we found communities where awareness of the Sustainable Development Program, which seeks to undermine our liberties, is thriving. Thriving except where those citizens are beginning to understand it and taking action. So what we're going to do is begin by telling you a little bit about Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, who we are and what we do and what we stand for. We're basically ordinary citizens who saw dangers here in Santa Cruz beginning to envelop as our mountains were ruled off limits for the forest owners to manage their forests, and as we see pressures on the farmers in the South County on being able to farm their lands, and as we began to find that home builders and landowners couldn't build homes on the land they owned, and then we began to find that the government was becoming the great real estate developer of our community and controlling now seeking to control the construction of 10,000 new housing units in our community, all along a silly notion of a trolley folly that's to transport people on a solar train as they discourage automobility and begin to incentivize using a system of carrots and sticks to cause people to abandon their individual mobility and seek mass transit. So how do we do this? Well, what we do is we have a website at freedom21santacruz.net, and we produce an online magazine or a newsletter called the Advanced Bulletin, and you can find that at advancedbulletin.net. We seek to educate policymakers. We have a speakers bureau, and we distribute materials that we and people from around the country have contributed to assess the subject that we're going to discuss for the next 2 hours here this evening. So why do we do this? We do this because we understand the nature of what liberty is and how the unalienable rights that our forefathers recognized as being inherent to the nature or imbued within us from a creator, and how we all have those inalienable rights to the use and enjoyment of our property, properly gained or properly earned, and how that leads to our ability to express our liberty, and that's what gives us a life that is a human life. And so we do this because we see that as our property rights are eroding across this country, and we see the decay of our cultural and social society, that some new awakening needs to happen, and we seek, those of us who are contributing to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz and other like-minded groups around the country, we see an opportunity to help create and promote an awakening in this country so that we can reestablish those principles that mankind holds so dearly unto himself. So I'm sitting here tonight with another director at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, Joan Perros, a geopolitical journalist who has attended international conferences, which as you boil it down, this won't be the focus of our conversation tonight, but when you boil it down, the ideas that are permeating our government are really very politically globalist in nature. And, of course, the political globalist that's in vogue today is not one that is based on the same principles upon which America was founded. So, good evening, Joan, and we'll be right back. Well, we're back here at Radio Liberty for the first Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show, and I'm introducing my co-host here, Joan Perros. How are you this evening, Joan?
Great. Thanks, Michael. It's good to be here on this momentous occasion.
Well, we're excited. You've been at this for a number of years now, and I've been working hard at it for about 3 years, and it takes a person some study, although that study's become more and more streamlined for those folks out there who want to answer the question, what's wrong in America? And while we can say there are many things that are wrong, you can boil it down
Well, like you said, you know, there is a global agenda, and that's frankly been the focus of my research. And so it's good to have a little bit of background about sustainable development and what that really means.
Well, we're going to begin in with that, and as the show goes along, we're going to have some prearranged callers this evening at this show. People who two callers are gentlemen who've been working at this sustainable development issue for the last decade or more, attending global conferences and engaging with policymakers in Washington, D.C. And then in our second hour, we're going to have citizens like ourselves who have jobs or businesses and families to run, and we do this as we can do it, and we do a lot of it, don't we, Joan?
Well, we do. And, you know, I just would like to thank you and your family, Michael, Dr. Monteith with Radio Liberty. And just, you know, if people are concerned, our own family, there's been a tremendous amount of sacrifice and investment that's gone on. So I do appreciate everything that all of you have done.
Well, for the listening audience, Joan has gone to these UN conventions and watched how the United States officials have participated, and it's quite amazing the information you have, how that never hits the major media. And we really don't know the complicity that our government has engaged in with respect to these globalist ideas, which in their own words calls for the elimination of private property. And every time I mention that, I just can't keep myself from reminding the listener that George Washington once said, freedom and private property are inseparable. And when you look at the Ten Commandments, it starts there. Thou shalt not steal. And unfortunately, to the extent that our government is contributing and coordinating with this globalist land use idea, our government is engaging in pure theft. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight.
Well, it's interesting that you would correlate that to the Ten Commandments, because in so many press conferences I've been in with Gorbachev, he calls this a new set of 10 or 15 commandments. So there is a new set of 10 or 15 commandments, and they're completely diametrically opposed to the ones that most of us grew up learning about. And they do steal from people, they lie to people, and it's an ethical and a moral problem that we're facing.
Well, let's, before Mr. Henry Lamb calls in from Tennessee to tell us about his leading role in identifying the problems and showing how it's affecting us in America, let's define this complicated mess called sustainable development and get to some of the essence of what it really is. Now, our listeners that have been with Radio Liberty before are familiar with sustainable development, but in these new communities that have signed on here by listening to this show and other Radio Liberty broadcasts, you'll come to understand what it is you're not going to read in your Chicago Sun or hear from your local mayor.
Well, you know, I ran out of a dance class to come here, and one of the gals said, well, where are you going next? Oh, I have a radio show. What are you talking about? How do you tell the uninitiated? It's Agenda 21, blank stare. And Agenda 21 is a program for implementing sustainable development. And she said, oh, sustainable development. How wonderful.
Well, they're very good marketeers. I mean, this has to do with organizational management skills and slick marketing, and that's how they turned Agenda 21. I actually sat on the Santa Cruz County Agenda 21 program and didn't know what it was at the time, but it's very simple. Once you go into the UN website, you'll see the United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda 21, a plan for transforming the world over the next period of time.
Well, no one should feel badly about not understanding or being able to describe it. I know that when I was at the 19 97 United States Conference of Mayors in a press conference. Mayor Daley was there in the closing conference, and I said, well, you're implementing sustainable development, which is comes from this blueprint, Agenda 21, from the United Nations. And he yelled and said, we don't care where these ideas come from as long as we have some, you know, good ideas. And so we have our politicians all over the place implementing this Agenda 21. Sustainable development, you can look at it philosophically or you can look at it as the brass tacks of the way it's implemented. You're really good at giving the philosophical background on things. Would you?
Well, I'll start in with this comment. You know, the nature of government is very simple to understand. There's basically two forms of government that mankind has ever experienced. One is that the idea that government exists for the purpose of protecting an individual's unalienable rights. Now, mankind's greatest achievement came with the founding of America. And although our implementation hasn't been perfect, in the later decades, it seems that our implementation is falling apart. But the concept holds as true today as it has throughout the course of human history. In watching the movie Passion on its opening night, you know, I couldn't help but realize that movie was about political theory in terms of how that crucifixion was carried out. We had an unrestrained democracy that demanded something in a government that wasn't there to protect the rights of the individual. Well, the second kind of government is a government that exists to control human action. And what sustainable development is, working really under the terms and guidance of the United Nations Charter, is something that is exactly contrary to that first system of government, a system of government that limits itself to the preservation or protection of a citizen's rights. And so what we have with sustainable development, and we'll make the case for this over tonight and succeeding weeks, is that it really represents a new system of government for America. It's the elimination of separation of powers that the sustainable developers seek, and the checks and balances and the political boundaries that make up the mechanism for our representative democracy, our democratic republic. And what it substitutes it with is a system of councils that operate by stakeholder consensus. And these are facilitated, which is a slick term for saying that they are manipulated into a predetermined outcome. Now, where does that predetermined outcome come from, do you suppose, Joan?
Well, Agenda 21 and all of the underlying documents, which would be the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. I think of Agenda 21 as the OGs, the operating guides, and the Bible that gives the core moral beliefs or values of this group of people who would bring us a new world order. The Bushes have called it a new world order. Are contained in the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, which tells you those things which are not sustainable. And that would be patterns of our consumption in the United States, modern systems of agriculture and farming. It goes on and on and on for about 1,200 pages. But
it might be interesting to focus more on what is not sustainable than what is, because that really tells us the essence of the anti-human nature
cars.
Of sustainable development.
Cars are not sustainable.
Fossil fuels.
And refrigeration. And so if you could imagine what your life would be like without these modern-day conveniences, and then you look at documents from the Gaia Trust, that would give us these global eco-villages, and then take...
Well, we have eco-villages coming to Santa Cruz. It's all over our newspaper.
Well, and yes, and it's this odd type of housing, this very high-density, high-rise, where your little business and your living quarters are all put into this high-rise chicken coop. And we see this, where people are crammed into areas. And the reason people are being crammed into these small, tight, compact areas, because there's a program called the Man in the Biosphere program that the United Nations has designed, which was attempted to be implemented in the United States, which would create these zones, these core regions and buffer zones where no humans are going to be allowed. And we have animals such as wolves and bears being reintroduced in those regions, which are completely hostile to humans, because you need to control humans. And to control humans, you confine them into these spaces. And then to control them when they're in these spaces, you need to have a police state. And so there's a whole global police state agenda that goes with this. But I don't think we're going to focus too much on that tonight, but just in the sense of a really broad picture, this is a huge program. There were a number of precepts that were introduced at the Rio Earth Summit in 1992 called the Rio Principles. And those Rio Principles talk about sustainable development as equitably meeting the development and environmental needs of the future. And that sounds wonderful. We all want to
a rosy future.
A rosy future. But define the environment. What is the environment? Well, the environment is all of the natural resources in the world. They are your trees. It is your water. It is the air you breathe. It is all of the minerals. It is all of the oil, all of the gold and the diamonds on the face of this earth.
All the farmland.
All of the farmland, all of the productive resources of this earth.
The minerals.
That is the environment. And so we're talking about an elite core group of people taking over the control and milking the wealth of all of those resources and putting us into a feudal type of condition in order that they would control and reap the benefits of all of that.
Let's go back and show how that fits into this new system of government, because certainly we won't have all natural resources and all rural lands in America controlled by a small elite anytime overnight. But what happens is that they create a table with a limited number of seats. And so what we're seeing now are multinationals and local businesses rushing to this green cabal, begging for a place at the table. And the result of that, of course, is if they're successful, that table will continue to shrink and shrink and shrink. Because once they're able to neutralize a citizen's unalienable right to property by virtue of the attempt and the succeeding attempt, and that's what we're going to hear later on in this show, the succeeding attempt to collectivize all of our natural resources and all of our rural lands in this country, we begin to see how this new system of councils, watershed councils and fire councils and councils everywhere, we've certainly got them all over this town, and they're in your town too. They're not reported much in the newspaper, but they're there. And it's a select group of people who make policies by, quote, consensus. Now, if you disagree with the consensus, you're not very welcomed at these things.
Yeah.
And that becomes the key. If you want to keep a free society and a government of representative democracy, you've got to begin to understand what's happening in your community and expose these phony councils for what they are. And it doesn't take a lot of people to begin to do that, because reason can prevail when it at least makes the effort. Now, the second element, besides a new system of government that sustainable development leads us to, is a new system of economics. The central goal of sustainable development is to replace free enterprise with government-private partnerships, or sometimes they're called public-private partnerships. And you can check your newspaper and find reference to that term all the time, as though we're making peace with everyone by partnering certain favored folks with government agents. And that just reminds me of something else George Washington always said, which was this: government is not reason. It's not persuasion. Government is force. So when you partner with the agent of force, you're either receiving protection or favoritism. And those who are not willing or able to partner with government become the feudal serfs of this newly arranged economic order. What do you see that helps you understand that dynamic, John?
Well, you know, I listened to Stephen Rockefeller explain a document from the IUCN, and it's the Draft International Covenant on Environment and Development. And in that document, it calls for the creation of an international economic order. And in order to create that international economic order, you have to transfer the resources from the developed nations, in other words, the United States, to the third world or the developing nations.
Well, that sounds like the outsourcing problem that Silicon Valley is facing with all of the previously secure white-collar jobs going to India.
Well, it boils down to the very destruction of this nation and reducing us to a third world country.
Well, here we are back at Radio Liberty at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show. It truly is from sea to shining sea, because later this evening we're going to bring in some folks from places like South Carolina and Texas and Wisconsin and the other sea, up in Maine, up in the far opposite corner of this country. And we're going to start to see how the Wildlands Project, which is an element of sustainable development, is everywhere. And until Americans begin to understand that our resources are under massive attack by a controlled governmental interest working with certain private foundations and certain multinational corporations, we are simply sitting ducks for the elimination of our liberties. So the third element that I see that really begins to centralize the ideas behind sustainable development is that at the core, sustainable development seeks a new system of justice. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was at the Environmental Law Conference in South Africa on the occasion of the 2002 Millennium Summit. And what fascinated me and interested me in attending that was a statement in their press releases prior to the conference that said that the fatal flaw has been, you know, in implementing sustainable development has been how to translate the policies and treaties of sustainable development into operational laws that could be implemented and enforced. So absolutely, these people are scrambling to implement these in any way they can. And as you have experienced, they don't always use the existing laws. They are attempting to destroy the laws. There are all types of administrative processes that are being used to deprive people of their constitutional liberties and their rights.
Well, here in California, our notorious legislature has been doing that on many, many fronts. The waterfront is a good one. You know, California and Texas are the two states in the union, really the two places in the country that have recognized that when you pump water out of the ground, it belongs to you. Now, that's a property right, and if you lose the property right to water here and in Texas, you'll have lost it everywhere in the world. And once a centralized force, and there is what's called a global integrated water plan that our local water districts talk about on the local level. This is all local to global here. But that integrated water plan for the state of California will eliminate the farmers' control over the water they pump. Here in our own community, the farmers are subject to a tax on their water that they pump from their well, and that tax keeps rising. Well, fortunately, the farmers here have figured out that's an attack on their private property, and some good lawsuits are being formed, but there are about six other major regulatory, federally imposed regulatory regimes about ready to come down on our farmers, just like the farmers everywhere around the country. And these poor people are being set up for a fall. But it's not just the farmers that fall. Because I don't know anybody living in Chicago or Albany, New York, or downtown Santa Cruz wants to eat food that's been produced by a collectivized state farm that operates simply on the basis of partnership with their buddies and beneficiaries who become the new managers of a land that really is controlled by government.
And why is that? Because if we are creating a global police state, then food can be withheld from a person to control them. Water can be withheld from them. One of the things I learned at that last summit was that under the FAO, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, all of the genetic resources of the world are being monitored, they're being controlled, they're being measured through a program called the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment. So all of these programs are underway. In fact, if a person has any doubt, I mean, I'm sure everybody's aware of their own communities, but go to the journals of the globalists and you will see water.
So generally speaking, sustainable development, or Agenda 21, can be identified as the imposition on America of a new system of government, a new system of economics, and a new justice. But these folks are very clever. They know how to sell it. They've got a bribe for anybody. Anybody who wants to play can become a participant in sustainable development. But what ends up happening is that if America falls for such a crazy notion, it's only a matter of time before the apparent luxury that seems to represent freedom collapses on a decayed foundation that used to be the embodied in ideas from the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and Bill of Rights. You see, it's being stripped away piece by piece, And while the money from a Federal Reserve system keeps pumping out the fiat money, so that we're able to continue to enjoy the kind of lives that we've come to expect, what lurks behind is a collapse of the system. And even if the economic system doesn't collapse, if we've sold our independence, if we've sold our soul, we've ended up really with nothing.
Well, we will collapse. Our families are collapsing. Our schools, our counties, our cities, our country is collapsing. And understand that beneath this moral collapse, they have a solution behind that, too. It's a document called the Earth Charter. And so underlying all of this is a moral or a spiritual agenda to bring a new set of values. And you'll hear about values being talked about quite a bit, but their values are based on moral relativism, and again, it's a new world order with values that relate mankind to nature in a very inverted and perverted way, where mankind is no longer to be the steward over the earth, but man is no longer as important, and in some cases less important, than the rocks, the trees, the bugs, on the animals.
We're talking about a moral, a political, a social, and a cultural coup that's occurring in America. Let's cause the audience to understand, though, how this got into America. And the place to start there is the Rio Conference back in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro. George Bush Sr., the president then, went to that conference, and while on a yacht offshore, he signed the Rio Accords as a soft law document for the United States. But what happened was he brought it home and he caused the federal agencies to begin to implement it. His successor, Bill Clinton, set up the President's Council for Sustainable Development, included such luminaries as Ken Lay from Enron and the heads of the environmental organizations, as well as this cabinet. And the current President, George Bush, has the Sustainable Development implementation on a very accelerated pace. So we really do have a bipartisan attack on the ideals of America, always window-washed with something else. But when you get down to the bottom line, our liberties are eroding, our private property is being taken.
Well, in fact, those Rio Accords stated that the states shall cooperate in a spirit of global partnership to implement this agenda. And so all of our agencies have been co-opted in the implementation of that. Locally, it's our planning departments, and every aspect of government is being brought along with this. At the federal level, it's the EPA and every one of the federal agencies.
Well, in this county, we have massive regulatory programs being worked out right now, one by the Department of Agriculture, one by the Department of the Interior, another by the Department of Commerce. And these are huge regulatory regimes that, in one case, they even talk about regulating cat litter because of its potential effect on the Monterey Bay National Sanctuary.
Well, they even have plans to come into your home and see how you deal with recycling and waste.
Well, that's an interesting concept. Just in the San Jose Mercury this last week, the former planning director of Santa Cruz County, now city manager in the city of Palo Alto, was discussed in a newspaper article for a program there where people's homes are knocked on and the doors knocked on, and the inspector wants to see their garages. They're worried about people living there. This is a redevelopment community. It's part of the smart growth program for that area, and what they've got to do is find ways to move people out and move people around so they can come in with their partner's real estate development. That is the government's partner's real estate development. Well, here we are at Radio Liberty, and we're about ready to take some prearranged calls. We'd appreciate if you held your calls tonight. Normally, this will be a call-in show, but we're trying to get some information out to the American public about sustainable development, Agenda 21, and the reordering of American society. It's not something any of us want to face up to, but if we don't, well, wishing won't make liberty last. Welcome back to Radio Liberty. We have on the line here tonight a gentleman named Henry Lamb. And if American Liberty, Henry, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Well, good evening to you. Henry's calling from Tennessee, so it's late back there. I feel like it's late here in California, and you're 3 hours later than I am. So how are you this evening, Henry?
Yeah, super, Michael.
Oh, that's great. But we're here, and Henry is one of the true heroes of the emerging American awakening, and if we're victorious and are able to keep our liberties that prior generations gave to us, Henry is going to be in the history book, Henry. I truly believe that, because you've brought this information to so many people, so many of us who were simply going about our lives and doing our productive best to advance our lives, and yet we knew something was wrong because the American political scene wasn't adding up. And you sure brought some light into a growing number of people's minds. And can you tell us about the history that you've had and the understanding you've had on sustainable development?
Well, if we had about 2 or 3 weeks, perhaps. But the short version is simply that 20 years ago I discovered rather accidentally that the federal government was intruding into private property rights, and I set out to find out why, how, and to do something about it. And I'm still on that quest. I discovered that the environmental agenda in this country originates in the international community, and was absolutely shocked in 1992 at the meeting in Rio de Janeiro, where we sent one of our members of our advisory board down, and Dr. Dixie Lee Ray. And at the time, she reported on Agenda 21 and the Sustainable Development Program that it included, and the other treaties that were coming out of that conference.
Now, she was at one time governor of the state of Washington.
Yes, she certainly was. Yes. But it was just way beyond belief at that time. And then as we watched it unfold through the Clinton years, through the President's Council on Sustainable Development, through United Nations meetings around the world advancing the global warming Kyoto Protocol and the Convention on Biological Diversity, it became only too real. It was very much like a nightmare. And now we are seeing these programs implemented across the country in small towns and large cities, in states, even here in Tennessee. The Nature Conservancy, working with other environmental groups and federal agencies, continue to take more land from private property owners.
And we're back at Radio Liberty with our special call-in guest, Henry Lamb. Go ahead, Henry. Thank you.
Well, it is something that very few Americans yet realize the significance of what is actually happening through this program of so-called sustainable development is actually effecting a transformation of our society. It is, in fact, the transformation that Al Gore spoke about in his 1992 book, Earth and the Balance. We are reorganizing our society not only around the principle of protecting the environment, but more importantly, around the principle of centralized command and control.
So the environment, I would take from that comment, Henry, is merely a mask for a real agenda that has to do with an economic, a global economic agenda.
Not only a global economic agenda, but a global social agenda. The system of governance is being transformed. And that is ultimately the goal. The environment is simply a convenient and readily available excuse to justify the policy decisions that are reshaping the processes of governance.
In fact, Henry, the Rio Declarations, number 4, says that the environmental protection shall constitute an integral part of the development process. So that's only just kind of a tiny piece of the puzzle, and as you say, it's just used as a tool to
bring us
all together.
Joan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Henry?
Super. that the thing that is so frightening is that it's happening all around us, and yet we don't recognize it when we see it. These visioning councils, this movement toward regional governance, the Delta Region Commission that was authorized just a few years ago, and now two more regions in the southeast and the southwest being proposed and about to be authorized in Congress now. These are transforming our system of making public policy decisions. We are taking that decision power away from our elected officials, putting it in the hands of appointed bureaucrats who have virtually zero accountability.
Well, we can certainly point to our local Santa Cruz audience all kinds of examples of that, from the Regional Transportation Commission, which is attempting, in their own words, documents that we've had undiscovered or have discovered from over a decade ago. The transportation policy here by these regional unelected agents is to, quote, modify our behavior by getting us out of our cars.
Well, and Chapter 28 of Agenda 21 says that local authorities will be a determining factor in fulfilling the objectives of implementing the sustainable development.
That's the plan that was developed more than a decade ago. We are seeing implemented now. And it's called smart growth. It's called visioning council, stakeholder council. It is all wrapped in warm and fuzzy sounding phrases. But the end result is that public policy decisions are being made by appointed individuals following an agenda that is developed at the international level and administered through our federal agencies, to our state government agencies, to our local agencies, transforming our system of governance from one which is controlled by the people to one that controls the people.
Well, and we're certainly seeing evidence of that everywhere. If people really sit back and pause, they can find it in their own community. And why they ought to worry about the farmers, the ranchers, and the rural owners is because when America's natural resources and rural lands fall into the hands of government and its agents, then America no longer is the land of the free, and it will be too late, perhaps, to become the home of the brave. Because, you see, it's the natural resources of our country that bring us everything we have. And if our farms and our forests become controlled by government, okay, who is answering to international organizations, then the people in the city, it's only a matter of time, a decade or a generation, before the appearance of our good lifestyle simply collapses on a rot of a tyrannical political regime.
Well, it continues to happen at every level of government. As you said, from Santa Cruz to every community across this country, to states and to the federal government. And right now, Michael, many people may not yet be aware that last Friday, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee approved an international treaty, the Law of the Seas Treaty, that would give to the United Nations for the very first time taxing authority, the authority to control the United States' presence in international waters. This is a tremendous surrender of national sovereignty, and yet this treaty is being proposed by unanimous consent to avoid an up or down vote in the chambers of the Senate.
Well, there's a pattern here, because we can look at our local government and these very, very potentially, the dangerous and controversial regulatory systems always appear on the elected officials' consent calendar. Now, these programs are always prepared in the consensus councils or visioning councils. They come to the Board of Supervisors, who rubber stamp them without any discussion at all. These are 250-page documents. And it sounds to me that that's what you're telling us. Our United States Senate, the Barbara Boxers and the Ted Kennedys and the Republicans and Democrats both from across this country are engaging in a massive propping
Yes.
Of an international organization that is bent to destroy private property and the freedoms that private property supports.
And why is that happening? You recall back in 1994, the Convention on Biological Diversity, it passed the Senate Foreign Relations Committee by a vote of 29-3. And within 30 days, we had generated enough opposition to prevent that treaty from being ratified in the Senate. They don't want us to have the opportunity to inform the American people to build that opposition. So in November of 2000, they passed the desertification treaty by unanimous consent without any vote or any recorded vote. And now they're trying to do the same thing with this Law of the Seas treaty. They don't want the American people to have a voice. And we have to change that.
Well, and they're not going to make it easy because, again, coming from the national down to the local system, what happens here is when these agencies begin to be discovered, they change their rules and make it very difficult. They give you 2 minutes to talk, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And, they stack it with their very small, select group of just useful followers. Most of the people don't understand the political philosophy or moral ramifications that sit behind Sustainable Development Agenda 21.
True. That's the hallmark and characteristic of the consensus process. And this is the process by which governance should be made according to the principles of sustainable development. The I believe statement number 8, I think it is, from the President's Council on Sustainable Development, says we need a new decision-making process, a collaborative process that is faster and will achieve our goals more efficiently.
And that's why as people across this nation begin to wake up and understand this new process, the consensus process, that there can be no middle ground, that there can be no compromise. People have to very seriously get involved in this battle and take no prisoners.
And people need to understand, Joan, that there has not yet been, nor will there ever be, a stakeholder council, a visioning council, that is called to order, that the end result has not been determined before the first word is spoken.
Correct. Predetermined outcomes.
Well, that's right. Yeah. it really is changing a democratic republic where government is limited and we elect our limited in its scope and we elect those who have that limited amount of power into a Soviet government.
And so often you hear people say, well, you know, we just want to be involved in the discussion. And there is no discussion because of that predetermined outcome that you point out, Henry Lamb.
That's exactly right.
But I'd like to define a Soviet and see what you think about this, Henry. Seems to me that a Soviet is a system of councils. I mean, I learned this in grammar school.
Sure.
It's a system of councils that report to an apex. In this case, it's there's NGOs sitting in Canada that are responsible for making the American sustainable communities a reality, and that NGO has contacts in most every county in this country now, certainly here in Santa Cruz. And these apex councils run a series below them that implement a predetermined outcome.
That's precisely right.
And, but if you went down and wanted to be on one of these councils, and by the way, you need to be there because, they do not like reason. Reason is like a cross to a vampire when you come to these Soviet council meet members. But members of a Soviet council are chosen by virtue of their willingness to comply with the predetermined outcome and their one-mindedness with the group.
It's just like in the Soviet Russia. You could not be in a Soviet unless you were a member of the party. You cannot participate in these stakeholder councils unless you are of the politically correct mindset.
Well, and that's when it can be a lot of fun. You know, you go to these meetings, you just keep a smile on your face, and the bad guys don't want you going on. What's always interesting is the ones who object to you the most are the ones you end up finding out are the guys who really know what Agenda 21 is. You know, most people at these little council meetings have no idea and really don't want to know because, having the poison candy that they blindly accept is somehow just fit into their comfort realm.
Well, fortunately, because of radio programs like this and the work of organizations like yours, Michael, out there in Santa Cruz, people are beginning to understand. People are beginning to wake up. People are beginning to get involved. And having watched this battle evolve over the last 20 years or so, I am really encouraged. I am hopeful that we will be able to salvage our freedom and save our liberty.
Well, you know, the good don't get going until the going gets tough. And I'll tell you, the toughness is out there. I too am seeing some rise. And, you know, an awakening now could put, you know, the human society, so far advanced of even where it was back in the early 1800s, with the spirit of 76 still with those people. Now we have so much more science and technology and a better understanding of how, reason can serve human interest, reason combined with a trust and a knowledge and a seeking of what's right and true. And so we have a great prospect ahead of us, so long as this 800-pound gorilla is taken out of the picture. And what I find is that when people begin to know what's going on, or particularly when some of the bad players have begun to be exposed, no one wants to be caught holding this Agenda 21 banana. They get out of the way real fast.
True. And unfortunately, the freedom movement, if you will, and I like to refer to it as the Freedom 21 campaign, advancing the principles of freedom in the 21st century, it is really catching on. And this year is our fifth annual national conference in Reno. And we expect to have hundreds of people, grassroots leaders from organizations all over this country, coming together to coordinate a plan of action to advance the principles of freedom. And you can't help but be optimistic when you see things like this happening.
Well, that's right, but you don't have to be a leader to come to this conference. This conference is for Americans, people who want to see the principles of individual liberty and equal justice resurge in this great land.
True.
Well, Henry, it's been marvelous having you, and it's so hard to not just keep talking. But Tom DeWeese from Virginia is on the line, and
fantastic.
And we're going to have folks from around the country who can bring further definition to the good outline you've given us here.
Thank you, Henry, for everything you've done to organize this movement.
Well, thanks a whole lot. You guys have a great program, and tell Tom I said hello.
We'll do that.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Good night. And now we're waiting to talk with Tom DeWeese. Tom, are you on the line?
I am here, Michael.
Well, Tom, it's good to hear your voice.
And good evening, Tom.
Joan is here, too. And Tom DeWeese is editor of the DeWeese Report and with the American Policy Center in Virginia. And, you know, Tom, we've been talking to both rural and urban audiences about sustainable development, Agenda 21. Many of the listeners probably have never heard these terms if they've not had the chance to hear the Radio Liberty broadcasts in the past, and that certainly is the case tonight. But you've been at this also for a long time, like Henry Lamb, who was on just a little while ago. And can you help us understand how it is that you have come to understand these issues and what it is that America needs to do about them?
Well, there's a mouthful to attack.
You can do it.
You know, I've been in this fight for probably about 12 years. This particular one, I got involved because I had a great interest in property rights and also education. And approaching both of those issues separately, just because I had an interest in them and was concerned about what was going on in those areas, and I began to learn from that perspective that there was a great connection between what was happening to people's property around the country and how the schools were being changed, restructured to change the attitudes, values, and beliefs of the children to accept the idea of global governance and top-down government control and really training them to be citizens in that kind of a world where we didn't have our constitutionally guaranteed rights, we didn't have individual liberty, didn't have property, and it became very obvious to me at that point. I think something, when you're talking about sustainable development, a lot of people immediately begin to associate it with environmental programs, and rightly so. But I think there's what people maybe don't understand is much, much more than that. It encompasses every aspect of our lives. It talks of social equity, which is literally every welfare program that has ever been proposed. Taking from those who produce and giving to those who don't, This is a major part of sustainable development. Controlling businesses, what kinds of businesses are really allowed to be in a sustainable development community, whether they have the proper attitudes, environmental attitudes.
And that's all dictated by the Global Compact.
Yes.
So there's a document for all of these programs.
Yes. The one of the interesting things, we hear a lot today about the obesity issue. There's just all kinds of activity going on about what kinds of foods people should eat and how McDonald's fits into that and so forth. This is part of sustainable development.
It dictates the amount of salt and sugar and fat in your diet.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Radio Liberty and to the first ever Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. We're here to attempt to inform a broadening group of Americans about the organized threat to the American way of living and the American ideals that are so unique in the history of the world and so important for the survival and happiness of the human people coming behind us. And we're here with Tom DeWeese, our special guest, calling in from Virginia. And he's discussing various other applications of the sustainable development movement, which is really, if you boil it down, designed to control human action. It is collectivist in its philosophy and in its application, and it uses some very clever techniques and a lot of high-priced marketing to sell us on ideas of environmentalism that are really just guises for assuming control over human action. And Tom, let's get back to the stories you're telling about obesity issues and other education and other aspects of sustainable development.
Sure. Let me give you an example. I was talking about the obesity issue and how that fits into the sustainable development agenda, which is really just an agenda to control every aspect of our lives. If you read sustainable development literature, you learn that, for example, farmland, what kind of crops are grown there, they advocate that raising beef cattle is no longer sustainable, that you should use that land because eating beef is harmful to your health, you understand, and that you should raise wheat and soy, so we can all, have tofurkey for Thanksgiving. And, this falls into the animal rights issue and everything else. But just to give you an example of how this works, just recently I got a report from Ireland where a McDonald's put in an application to build a new restaurant in a community there. The community government demanded an environmental impact statement on this, not an impact statement on the building of the restaurant itself and what that would have on the land, but an environmental impact of what the food served out of that McDonald's would have on the health of the people in the community. This is sustainable development, and this is the obesity issue that you're hearing on the news every day now, coming, full circle into what people think is an environmental issue. So
doesn't sound like freedom of choice.
Absolutely not. And what gets me about this, Joan, what just drives me crazy about these issues, corporations use to fight back.
Back to Radio Liberty, and our special guest is Tom DeWeese, and the discussion is about... Proceed, Tom. Just
okay.
Carry on.
Well, what I'm saying, a corporation like McDonald's, they announced today that they're going to stop serving the large selection of fries and these bigger options that you have on the menu. Not because the customers aren't going to buy it, but because they're under siege by attorneys and animal rights activists and these people who are just looking to make massive dollars off of controlling what they produce. and those who have a political agenda like sustainable development. And they don't fight back. They don't say, hey, it's our restaurant, and we'll serve whatever our customers want to purchase, and they start getting politically correct. And this is how sustainable development gets implemented step by step by step. You get these partnerships between businesses and government. And these businesses, the corporate heads of these things, are just wimps. They won't fight back. They won't stand up for their own product. They will just start to change it all, so they won't come under siege by these people.
Well, and you know, it occurs to me that all of these businesses are also engaging in this whole consensus process, and in the destruction of the institutions that we have, you end up with a real void of leadership. So, like you say, it's creating wimps. We don't have any leadership out there.
Well, but we all have a role in this. As consumers, when we find out that McDonald's isn't giving us what we want, and many of us may not want large orders of French fries, but for those who do, they need to let those companies know that that's the case. When I go to the hotels and they leave out their little save the water cards, you know, the water doesn't disappear. You know, water just moves around and changes form. But there's always water there. So why is it that I can't have a drink of water when I go to a restaurant? So I let the restaurant people know that, gee whiz, I expect to have water. And why are they placating a silly environmental movement rather than satisfying their customer? And I go on record of saying, I like my water, and I don't appreciate being reminded in hotels of some silly environmental religious credo that now sits on every bathroom counter in most hotels across this country. But we have a role as consumers to protect our place as the object of business service. Because, you know, we were talking, Tom, earlier about what a Soviet is, and I didn't get to the third element of that definition, but you've covered it as far as I'm concerned, because this is what I say about a Soviet in the economic context. I say that Soviets are the operating mechanism of a government-controlled economy, whether it be socialism or government-business partnerships. And you're describing exactly that circumstance with McDonald's, and we're seeing it with, gee whiz, just about everybody out there, as Joan indicates.
Freedom of choice disappears. Free enterprise disappears. You cannot have free enterprise in a sustainable program. You cannot have it. The two are diametrically opposed. The interesting thing about these companies that get into these partnerships, those that are willing to play ball end up making money. What you're talking about in the hotels where they won't, if you you know, will accept using your towels over and over again and they won't wash them, the hotels save money by not having to wash your towels and sheets every day, and they get a big medal for it, for being environmentally friendly. It has nothing to do with protecting the environment, but they found a way to save money. And those who are pushing these programs sell it on that aspect, and they get all these guys to go along with their agenda.
Well, it's the carrot and stick program that rural owners particularly are seeing heavily. But the plan for sustainable development, once the rural lands are pretty well controlled by the government and its corporate partners, then they'll move in more thoroughly into the urban areas. And we're seeing that already in Santa Cruz. So watch what's happening in your rural areas, wherever it is you live, and begin to identify the slick stuff you'll find in your newspaper that advertises how it is that sustainable development is moving right in to your backyard. And it's going to tell you how to live and ultimately how to think. And we'll all become the feudal pawns of a narrowing elite. Well, we're glad you're here with us tonight at Radio Liberty and Freedom 21. Welcome back to Radio Liberty and the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show. We're here to begin the process.
George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Adams, First Chief Justice John Jay. Names synonymous with this.
We're back at Radio Liberty, and I'm here with my guest, or my co-host, Joan Parros. And we're going to spend a few minutes talking, and after the great contributions from Henry Lamb, and I want to thank Tom DeWeese for his... Tom is a fellow who's been all around this country, and his writings are easy to find, and they're always very profound. He's right at the cutting edge of how the sustainable developers are moving to transform our society, and you want to learn quickly, tune into the DeWeese Report and the American Policy Center.
Well, it's just been a great introduction to the sustainable development movement tonight.
And here comes a theme song for Freedom 21 Santa Cruz that was recorded here, and from Sea to Shining Sea is what I say.
As we look out across America in the 21st century, ecological devastation, at least that's what they're telling me. Environmental apocalypse, as sure as the sky is blue. So sustainable development is taking aim at me and you. Sustainable. Tell me how you feel about that. And your purple mountains, majesty, are endangered habitat. You take up too much air and space, so they're relocating you to an eco-friendly biosphere. Your consuming days are through. Sustainable development, sweeping the countryside from the California coastline. Can see it nationwide. Coming soon to a town near you, biological diversity. Yeah, the eco police got plans for you and your so-called liberty. Hey, hey. Yeah, they're gonna save the planet, but not your liberty. Cause when they're talking endangered species, they ain't talking about you and me. Where's Paul Revere when you need him? Guess he's spinning. Cause the green coats are a-coming, boys. Are we still in the land of the brave? Hey, hey. Now all you citizen farmers better think about taking a stand, or they round you up and trade you a cup of kindness for your land. Cause when you're all locked up in cages made from tractors, rakes, and plows, you'll have plenty of time to ask yourself, who's in danger now? In the countryside, from the California coastline, we can see it nationwide. Coming soon to a town near you, biological diversity. Yeah, the eco police got plans for you and your so-called liberty. Hey, hey. So let's gather up this rotting mess of collectivist policy and toss it on the compost heap of the 20th century. Principles of individual liberty and advance the cause of freedom in the 21st century. Hey, hey, hey. E-I-E-I-O.
Well, we, if you want to buy that tune, you can check into the Freedom21SantaCruz.net website, and you'll quickly be directed to just how to do that. Put that on your local radio stations and play it at your parties and cause people to understand one way or another that the good news about sustainable development, Joan, is this. It's really not that hard to understand. And once you do and you can identify it in your community, it's going to be like throwing water on the Wicked Witch of the West. It can disappear pretty quickly. You know, we just need to cause that word to be spread across this country, and we're not going to see it happen on the networks or on the cable TVs or on the major city newspapers or even the small city newspapers when they're owned by Dow Jones, etc. You know, but we can get it on radio, and we can get it in the internet. And
well, that is the encouraging news, because these people are like cockroaches. Once you confront them and put out the truth for people, they disappear.
Well, that's right. And what we want to do tonight for this second hour is focus on different areas in the country where the same issues and the same discoveries are being found by ordinary citizens. These are rural citizens who are finding federal assault on not just their land, but their neighbor's land. And the important message there is that as the Wildland Project moves along, and let me explain the Wildlands Project. Sustainable development is really got three major elements. One is land use control. The second is educational indoctrination. We're seeing that in our schools. That'll be the subject of some future Freedom 21 Santa Cruz shows. And then it's a population control mechanism. Now that doesn't answer the question if they're trying to control the numbers of us or control the actions of us. But the clear words and verbiage of sustainable development are those three areas. So we're focusing tonight on land use, stemming from the ideals of private property and the inalienable right to the use and enjoyment of what it is that somebody has acquired or created. But within the land use element of sustainable development, you've really got two operating action plans. One is called the Wildlands Project, which is to, quote, rewild over half of the United States territory and completely eliminate human presence on that land. And then most of the other land will be subject to highly controlled and regulated uses. And that's what we're seeing across the country, and we're going to have evidence of that tonight, so that someone can't say, oh, this is just, you know, Santa Cruz. Everybody knows that Santa Cruz has got some crazy politics, and you just have some people out of control there. No, what happened here early in the system is now happening everywhere, and so we're going to get reports from a number of states on that matter.
Well, that's the beauty of the program for the listeners, and I'm sure that, you know, if you have a friend that hasn't heard the show, you'll want to get a hold of Radio Liberty to get a tape of this to share with everyone, because I've been amazed as I've listened to some of these people, I haven't met them all, at how brutal sustainable development, as it plays out, as it is implemented, how it has really hurt people.
Well, that's the nature of collectivism. I mean, that is tyranny, and so what we're really engaged in here is not a struggle between the Democrats and Republicans, or the leftists and the rightists, or the liberals and conservatives. It's a battle between liberty and tyranny, and that comes right down to the question of, well, what is one's form of government? Is it there to protect unalienable rights that Thomas Jefferson and John Locke and so many other brilliant men from before our time, and men and women today, is that the purpose of the American government going forward, or is it to become like the governments of all other countries at all other times?
This is an issue of life and death.
Well, it's certainly the issue about whether human beings are going to be able to live their lives as human beings or as mere chattel for a ruling elite. The second land use element is called smart growth, and these are these dense human settlements, that's the UN term, where people are quite well managed. And to give one idea of how the federal government is operating in this context, we can look at the Department of Interior's Bureau of Land Management Working Papers, 1994. And in there it says that in the context of ecological management, that human beings are to be considered biological resources.
Right.
Well, people should be given deep cause to that, because that's actually how all of our agencies are treating us, and it's going to have its day. It is having its day of coming to roost. And the other element about sustainable development that I think is largely overlooked by those of us who understand these issues is that our federal and state budgets are being busted by sustainable development programs, worthless train systems that I call that I think is part of a infrastructure for a post-private property era, because nobody's using these train systems. In San Jose, they're having to close it down, so now in the small county next door, Santa Cruz, we're going to have this expensive along the coast trail line that keeps us from expanding our freeway, which they've been talking about doing for 20 years, and instead we're going to get this little or worthless trail line at massive expense to people of the state of California and the federal government, because all of these bogus little programs are being funded by your taxes. And California put a big nail in its coffin yesterday as it assumes debt so that we can continue to implement these liberty-destroying sustainable development programs. Well, our first caller tonight from outside our community is, do we have Kay McClellan. Kay, are you there? Kay? Well, let's see. We can barely hear you. Let's see if we can get something done on the board here. Are you there now?
Yes.
Ah, now
oh,
we can hear
good
you,
to hear you, Kay.
You can hear me now.
Yes, ma'am. Now, for our listening audience, Kay is from South Carolina, from Richland County, and she's a landowner and has experienced sustainable development. I met you, Kay, back at a conference on these issues in Tennessee last summer, and for the listening audience, Kay made a presentation there that was one of the finest I've heard. In fact, has been written up at our Advanced Bulletin. That's advancedbulletin.net. And the story on this, even though it's not a local Santa Cruz story, it has been, I think, maybe our heaviest read story of all the ones we've put out over the last 9 months or so. And that just shows testament to how it is that these real-life circumstances are what can begin the awakening process for Americans. Because if this can happen to people in South Carolina, it can happen to you. So with that, Kay, fill us in some more, please.
Okay, well, we're a victim here of the land use control aspect of the sustainable living. Our local government has passed a comprehensive land use plan that's going to use zoning and large lot requirements and environmental restrictions on water and trees and farmland, just anything you can think of to restrict that will inhibit land use. And, of course, the end result will be that land is going to be devalued. It's going to be difficult to sell to anybody but the environmental groups who are writing all the rules here. And you can't borrow money on it. You can't divide it, not even for your heirs. And in our county, it's particularly vile, Michael, because much of the land at risk belongs to African Americans, many of whose families acquired it as freed slaves. So a lot of our property owners are land rich and money poor. In fact, that's true of the white farmers as well. But the county knows that our minority population is still growing while the white population is not. It's pretty much, it's not losing any, but it's leveled out. And this plan will stop all growth, which of course they know will mostly be minority growth, and then deprive the African Americans of their land. And as I said, I'm own property there. I am not an African American. The white owners are going to all share the same fate as our neighbors, and we are going to have actually, it's going to result in a complete rural cleansing of Richland County.
So what will happen with these people that are displaced from their farms? And you might tell us why it is that this is happening. Why is it that displacement on these farmlands is occurring?
Well, this particular tract of land is the largest contiguous mass of property on the East Coast that is still primarily owned by African Americans. It is also a bonanza in real estate for another reason. We're told it's the largest piece of pristine farmland. It's 330 square miles of beautiful farmland outside the state capital of Columbia. And it is the largest tract of land on the East Coast, again, that is within a 15-minute drive of a major metropolitan city or state capital. So it's a gold mine in real estate, but it's not for sale. The families have held on to it for generations, and we're all fighting together now to try to save this property. But it names, our comprehensive land use plan names all of Lower Richland. That's what I've described, the 330 square miles of the southeastern half of Richland County is called Lower Richland. They've named it in our plan the Congaree Preserve and say that our land will basically be used as green space to enhance a swamp, the Congaree Swamp, which is the southwest border of Lower Richland, all of Lower Richland. And we essentially had held off the zoning for 5.5 years that would create the preservation area aspect of our land. But then in October, Senator Hollings from South Carolina had that swamp turned into a national park. And so that's another element that people need to be aware of. The Park Service's the National Park Service, BLM out west, they're very involved often in these land grabs. But because of the park, it is really a contrivance. It's going to empower the county to go on and downzone us now as some sort of preservation area that has to do with the park.
Well, what will happen with the people as they become displaced?
Well, they do have a plan. They have a concept that is embraced by this plan, and that is out in the rural areas, they're going to allow us so many 1 square mile, what they call villages. They're like communes where all the growth will be forced into these areas, as well as being an urban growth boundary is going to be drawn essentially between Lower Richland and Upper Richland County. But out in the rural areas, they're going to allow these little 1 square mile villages in certain places. And all of Lower Richland is going to have, all 330 square miles of Lower Richland is going to have 7 little villages. But the horrible part about the villages is that they are to be separated by economic ability. And the one kind that they've designated, the only kind that they've designated for us, is a kind called non-employment-based villages. They're really going to be like reservations. They're going to be stuck out in the middle of nowhere. They'll have no opportunities for employment. And I think that's where the displaced people, not only poor people, but the ones that aren't so poor that were land rich and money poor and didn't have anything once they lose their land. And that is social engineering, and I believe that if it catches on, if it works, I think that we're going to be a blueprint for the nation, for any rural communities, particularly minority communities, anytime somebody wants to not only displace the people, but put them in a situation where they can't ever recover.
Well, and I think we should underscore these eco-villages that are an integral part of the implementation of sustainable development. It basically imprisons people and deprives them of the right to have freedom of movement. There's a lot going on with developing internal passports for people even to be able to travel within this nation. So this does not bode well for the freedoms and the mobility that we've come to enjoy. And when you go to the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report that tells us that cars are not sustainable, we can see where this is all headed.
That's exactly right.
And Diane, we have... Kay, we have Diane on the phone from Texas. But before we leave, and I want to thank you so much for calling tonight. It's late where you are.
Well, you're my heroes, and I would be happy to talk to you anytime.
Well, but let me just have you take a few seconds and tell us what transpired with you on Monday.
Okay, well, I went to Washington. The North Carolina Association of Elected officials, elected county officials, sponsored me to make a presentation at the National Association of Counties for the on property rights. And what was so stunning was that after I finished my presentation, we had a packed house, and we didn't know who would come. We didn't really know what to expect as to what kind of turnout we'd have, because it was a breakout session from the main program. But we had a packed house, and what was so tragic and also so eye-opening for me was that when I got through with my presentation, telling them what was going on in Richland County and my take on things as all over the country, I asked for questions, and everybody in there raised their hand. And I heard horror stories from every state imaginable in this country. Some were complaining about biosphere reserves in their area. Some were talking about Bureau of Land Management or National Park Service. Some were talking about comprehensive land use plans. But these were elected officials, elected county officials from all over this country. And it let me know that this is such a tragic situation that we are going to have to face.
Kay, you are an American hero. Thank you for what you're doing back east.
Well, thank you for letting me talk to you tonight.
Good night, Kay.
Good night.
We'll be right back.
welcome back to Radio Liberty and the initial Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show. We have on the line now Diane Lacey from Texas. And Diane, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
It's great to hear you.
Hi, Diane.
Hi.
I'm here with Joan Parros, and we're going through different sections of the United States and talking about how sustainable development has moved into the rural land as part of the Wildlands Project. And we just heard from South Carolina, and we heard earlier from Tennessee, and you're out on the western side of Texas, and you're a rancher there, and give the audience here a little understanding of what your experiences are in respect to the sustainable development movement.
Well, we've had it. We're out in a very remote area of Texas. A lot of Texans don't even know about us, but we're in the Davis Mountains region of Texas. We're 130 miles north of Big Bend National Park, one of the largest national parks in the country. And most of the livelihood out here is ranching, and large areas of land is in the ranching business, traditional ranching business, and has been in the families. Most of them are family-owned ranches and have been in their families since the 1800s. One thing we've noticed over the past 20 years is slow encroachment into this area by governmental entities or non-governmental entities, such as the National Park Service expanding its boundaries. And 15 years ago, there was a feasibility study done to determine whether this Davis Mountains could be turned into a national park. And bear in mind, we're just right up the road from a big national park. And it was interesting because it brought out all the remote ranchers that don't usually see each other very often. They all came to town when they heard about this for the public hearing on it. Over 500 ranchers met with less than 2 days' notice and stopped the feasibility study. And it was quite interesting the amount of effect that had. They had drawn this map with a big circle around all the lands out here and had a plan that they were implementing for it. But we found out that the study had to be stopped. It couldn't go through, because if it goes through, it could be picked up later on, years down the road and implemented. So we knew we had to stop the study, and we did. And then we organized into a grassroots property rights organization to educate our members about things like this that were coming. And then the Nature Conservancy, it was at the same time, right after the National Parks study, the Nature Conservancy started coming out here and looking at property and talking to ranches out here, and they started to get a foothold in this region. And we met with them right at the beginning and told them we did not want them to buy property in the Davis Mountains, and because we knew that it was their habit of buying property, holding it a few years, and then selling it.
Now, is this something that that you knew at the time, or is it...
No, we knew that at the time. Okay. We had studied...
And we're going to split away for a moment here. We're back at Radio Liberty and the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show, and I have as my telephone guest from Texas, Diane Lacey, who has had experience with the federal agencies and the non-governmental organizations, the environmental groups like Nature Conservancy, in her community attempting to turn lands belonging to American citizens into national parks, part of the Wildlands Project. And we're talking a huge swath of area. And I've been to Davis Mountain, and it's beautiful land. I don't know too much about Texas, but I sure liked that the scenic environment that you're from, and I think that's part of the reason that motivates these federal agents to come out and attempt to make a land grab.
Well, you're right, and it's amazing how many different organizations are trying to encroach on the private lands in Texas. Texas is a private property rights state, and but we've seen in the past 5 to 10 years, it's just been enormous aggression of things like this that are taking away our property rights. And the Nature Conservancy is leading the pack. They are not only are they creating their preserves or conservation areas, but they will they're now deciding that the cheapest way to go is to buy conservation easements, and that's another a loss of property rights.
Well, if you're a rural landowner and you're seeing federal agents coming around with some cash and conservation easements, just know that the entire reason that they're doing that is to gain management control over your land, if not now, at least within the next generation. You know, Diane, this is wonderful talking with you, and we're going to want to have you back on this show because I know you're very involved with water issues down there, and of course water issues become big in California. It's Texas and California that actually have private property interests in water, and that's why California and Texas are such a huge target for the integrated water globalists who are coming into our communities and finding all kinds of clever ways to grab the property right away from the farmer or rancher. So can we agree to do this again and take on a little broader issue than we were able to tonight?
Oh, that'd be great.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being up late, because I know how ranchers' lives work, and there's a lot of things going on. But we're trying to get the message out that that it's not just an isolated occurrence, but that the Wildlands Project is here, there, every state, every rural county in this country is being affected and has been affected by the Wildlands Project. And property owners need to come to understand what's happening, and they need to take a no-compromise position when these agents of force come out with their sticks and carrots and try to strip off American landscapes. So, Diane, thank you very much, and we'll look forward to talking again soon.
Well, thank you. I appreciate what you're doing.
Good night now. And now we have from Wisconsin, Dan Milkey. Dan, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. You and I are new acquaintances, but I do know of the insurrection about over this government takeover that has been occurring in Wisconsin. And I know you're an organic farmer, and you folks have had, through your organizing around the Sustainable Development Agenda 21 issues, you've had some remarkable success in a number of counties there. And you want to describe some of that for us?
Well, we're surprisingly, we're kind of rocking the boat here pretty hard. About 2 years, well, actually in 1999, our government here in Wisconsin snuck, I guess is the best way to say it, the Smart Growth Comprehensive Planning Law through on the budget. And so it didn't really get into any type of discussion. It just came through on a budget. And they started promoting this right away. And I was one of the ones that happened to be at the first meeting because I am involved in government a little bit in regards to tax assessing. And they presented us this wonderful, ideal plan to save the environment and the farms. And as they started to present this program up on the screen, I started to get nervous. And actually, I got quite nervous when I started hearing about buffer zones and, you know, off limits to farming or living situations. And I got quite upset. And so I went to a town meeting and spoke my piece. And it wasn't more than a few days later, I was taken aside by a senior planner in one of the planning, or, you know, in our county planning, and tried to shut me up and explaining to me that this is all fine and it's going to work great. But it wasn't quite what happened, and I explained to him that, you know, my family came here in the 1600s in Plymouth Bay for freedom. We moved to Wisconsin in 1860, and we've been farming this land ever since. And I said, I want my children to be able to live on that farm, and to be able to farm just like I'm farming. And this planner looked at me, and he said, I don't know what your problem is. We'll allow one of your children to live there. And that's when the fight began. So,
welcome back to Radio Liberty.
Yep. We're here, and
Welcome back to Radio Liberty. I'm Michael Shaw, and this is the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Show. And we have on the line a special call-in guest from Wisconsin, Dan Milkey. And Dan, please proceed and describe for us what you're seeing there.
Well, where did I leave off? I noticed I got cut off there for a little bit.
The one child being allowed to live on your farm.
Well, that's when the fight started, and I got together with some other people who are in the northern part of the state here, and we started attending meetings, and we started putting up the fight, and decided it's time to take back Wisconsin, and that this type of control that we're seeing is going to destroy our farms. It's going to destroy our families. It's going to destroy our lifestyle.
Well, that's going to do a lot more than that, because when American farms are collectivized, the American people will be collectivized, and the folks in the city who might be living high and feeling good won't for a long time, because you can't have a succeeding society where each person can lead a life of their own unless our lands and natural resources are owned by fellow citizens. So it's so important for people living in Chicago or Los Angeles to support the people who are managing our landscape, because it's only through careful human management that we're able to develop the resources that keep all of us so comfortable and with so much opportunity. So when farmers like the people in northern Wisconsin or the people in the Pajaro Valley here in Santa Cruz find their lands fully subjugated to governmental management control, it's all of us that are going to lose.
What's interesting is it doesn't take much for people to speak out and make a difference, though. When we started to speak out and talk to the other farmers and other people in the area, we started having meetings with the townships that we have, and we're seeing 250 and 300 citizens coming forth, which is probably close to half of the townships are showing up these meetings. And we're fighting this system, and they're starting to crumble in the northern part of the state. We have 9 bills before the legislature right now that are trying to change this law. And I guess that's the key, is there's still hope if everybody can stand up and do something rather than just sit back and figure it's a failure.
Well, it's certainly not a failure, because the one thing that the sustainable developers don't figure on is human spirit. They also don't figure on American industrious, nor do they figure that the culture of Western civilization can rise to maintain its forward progress. And there have been these globalist efforts before, from the Romans to the British. And the sustainable developers, whether they be Americans or Europeans, they're going to end up with the same fate, because the human spirit will rise, and we're seeing that happen in Wisconsin. And boy, I'll tell you what, it might make sense if you guys got on an airplane and found your way to Santa Cruz and caused our farmers to understand that the pressures they're under are the same that you're under, and working together.
Well, we hope we can make it work, and we're doing the best we can, and things are happening. I mean, it's exciting. I was on the radio today with another planner in our fight, and tomorrow we'll be at another meeting. And it's surprising how many people are willing to come out and put their heart into this, and we're seeing changes.
Well, that's great news, and we'll keep in contact. And as the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Show spreads out, we're going to make sure that people in the country know the model that Wisconsin is really becoming.
Thank you.
Well, have a good evening, and thank you so much for calling so late on a night when I know you're getting up early tomorrow.
I'm ready for bed, but I'm willing to stay up for this fight.
Well, thank you very much.
God bless.
You too. Well, what an exciting evening. And now, from West Virginia, we have Ann Roach. Ann, are you there?
I'm here, Michael.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. I feel so happy. I might have had a little imbalance here. I've got 3 wonderful Southern female voices on this radio show tonight, and it really shows how the spirit of America rising up against this insidious force that's coming out through our federal government and into our state governments and right down to many of our local governments and water districts and everywhere else is something for which a rising number of people across this country are taking a position and standing up, and so often they're just the sweetest and most delicate and usually feminine personas that a good thought could imagine. And so you're one of those people, and I'd like you to tell our audience, both rural and urban listeners, just what you're experiencing in West Virginia.
Michael, in West Virginia,
what started out as just an upkeep to our road became a National Park Service land grant scheme. We were invited into a armed guarded room that said, yes, we're going to fix your road, but we've changed our mind. We're taking all the land in the view shed. I never heard the word view shed before. I really never paid attention to the National Park Service before, other than Smokey Bear. But it was a shock to me, and I was just grandmother minding my business, and I've become someone who's, they may push me in the river, but I'm going to stand up. And you think the armed guard is a little exaggerated, but at one meeting recently, they had police dogs there. I guess if you walk 100 West Virginians into a room and tell them they're going to take their land, they do need those police dogs. But it, they are after our prime riverside property, our farms, and we didn't know what to do. We didn't know what was happening. And it does feel good that other people do know, but it feels bad that it can happen and it is happening, and you don't know what to do.
Well, have you had some success in dealing with the federal agents and the environmental groups that have come into your community with this land grab in mind?
They sort of reminded me of cockroaches. Once we showed them the light that they were there and what they were doing, they became better at what they're doing. We have backed them off to the promise of only the right-of-way for the road. But I'm convinced that once they take our land in this roadway along the river, that they'll never build the project and they'll just have our land.
Well, you know, in Santa Cruz, you make mention that, you know, when you turn the lights on, they kind of go underground. And that's happened here, too. The Federal Department of Interior was in town with a countywide habitat conservation plan. Well, we made enough noise that they put that underground. But now you've got the same kinds of plans coming out from several other federal agencies with massive regulatory schemes that are incorporating the same idea. So it's like that ugly monster that you keep beating, but it keeps coming back. It changes its form a little bit. It sort of reminds me of the androgynous spirit that was floating through Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion. You know, the sustainable development keeps looking pretty. It keeps floating around. It changes its place. It changes its demeanor. But it's got 100 tricks up its sleeve, and that's why we've got to understand what we're fighting, and we need to learn how to fight it, and putting light on it is really the best medicine.
Well, Michael, every time I get a little depressed or worry about the fight or get tired of fighting, it seems like a door opens for us, and I just thank God there's people like you and Tom DeWeese and Henry out there that are there. And that are helping us, and it really feels quite lonely to watch your neighbors die of heart attacks, worry about the government taking their land. And they're good at the propaganda. When they find your Achilles heel, like, call me an outsider. And then I have to keep little American flags around me to remind me I'm not an outsider. I'm an American. I'm one of those 50 stars. And it's, I think of Rosa Parks, although I don't mean to equate myself with such a fine little old lady, but she refused to stand up, and I just decided I refused to lay down.
Well, that's a beautiful line, Ann, and I know it's heartfelt, and I know it's true. And there are so many people out across this country who are confused, don't know what's going on. And the beauty of sustainable development is that once you understand it, you've got their gig down. And all you know is that what their goals are is to take private property, to undermine the United States Constitution, and contribute to a global collective. And, you know, their plan, the reason sustainable development is called Agenda 21 is because they say this is the plan for restructuring human nature during the 21st century. So we're up against the all-time battle, and it's just marvel, you know, and anyone can fight back. You don't have to be a big guy with a machine gun. In fact, that wouldn't work at all. What you need to be is a person who's drawing upon the best within themselves as you are, and bringing some help to your neighbors. Remember, it's really our neighbors' private property that we need to be first protective of, because if we're not protective of our neighbors' private property, well, we're going to lose our own. So I want to thank you for being up. Most of our callers tonight here are from the East. People know about the stories in the West, but they're throughout the country. And I want to thank you for staying up so late calling in and sharing this information, because when Americans know what's going on, and when they all understand that what happens to you is what's going to destroy their children's lives, then we're going to see an awakening in this country that will be truly remarkable.
Michael, bless your heart, and thank you.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Good night, Michael.
Good night.
Well, it's been really great to have all of these wonderful callers, and before we take on the next one, people are wondering, I'm sure, where they can get a concise or succinct compilation of sustainable development. And there's a syllabus that's been put together by Dr. Stanley Monteith with Radio Liberty that has all of the important documents in one concise place. And if they will call 1-800-544-8927 and ask for that syllabus, they can get that information quite reasonably. Again, that's 1-800-544-8927 for the Sustainable Development Syllabus with Radio Liberty.
Well, that's marvelous. You know, Dr. Stan Monteith and Radio Liberty have brought a lot of light and focus here in Santa Cruz and in many other places around the country. Wherever I go, I hear about Stan Monteith. And I just want to thank him so much for giving Freedom 21 Santa Cruz this opportunity weekly to take our grassroots, homegrown defense of our property, defense of our children, and defense of our country, defense of the ideals of America, out across this country. You're out there listening. I know you are, Stan, and I want to say thank you. But our next caller is from Maine. So now we really have gone from sea to shining sea as we sit here looking over the Pacific Ocean, and now we're about to talk to someone who's up in the northern corner of America along the Atlantic Ocean. Ken Anderson, are you there?
Good evening, Michael. Yes, I'm here.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. I met with Ken here a few months ago back in Maine, and some of us were giving some presentations there, and Ken got up from the audience and talked about the on a rather impromptu basis, I think, talked very eloquently about the dynamic going on in Maine, and it just proved the point of the lectures on sustainable development that had been given that day. So, Ken, I'm glad you're able to call here tonight, and I tell our listening audience how sustainable development has found its ugly face into your beautiful state.
Thank you, Michael. I'm happy to be here. I live in Millinocket, which is just southeast of Baxter State Park in northern Maine. It's an area that an organization called Restore, which is interestingly is made up of some of the same people who brought the spotted owl fiasco to the West Coast a few years back.
Well, the figures in the environmental movement are few indeed, and they seem to pop up here, there, and everywhere.
Restore has their goal of creating a 3.2 million acre national park around our community, and between Restore and the Nature Conservancy, they've been doing a good cop, bad cop approach since I moved to this area a few years ago. Millinocket was a mill town until Great Northern Paper Company went bankrupt and closed its mill here a year ago last January. Before they filed for bankruptcy, they sold a great deal of their timberland to the Nature Conservancy and put another 200,000 acres in the conservation easement controlled by the Nature Conservancy.
Well, the Nature Conservancy has come up pretty regularly tonight. They seem to be the global order's land manager.
We were faced with better than 30% unemployment. More than half of our tax base was down. The town hired a company that was supposed to come in and facilitate consolidation of municipal services and to promote development. they haven't done that. That became evident to me at the time, and I wasn't very familiar with sustainable development or local Agenda 21 at the time, but I could see that what they were doing looked suspicious. They set up visioning conferences in which a select group of carefully chosen stakeholders and others who could be easily manipulated were given the task of creating a vision for the year 2050. And that the outcome was predetermined, and that was obvious. And it was curiously similar to those prepared by other local Agenda 21 vision committees around the world. So I started looking into that, and of course I came to sustainable development and local Agenda 21 and the United Nations, and all the pieces came together, which is why I was at that conference that I met you at last December, Michael.
Well, I think what it demonstrates is that when a person is willing to stop evading the search for a real answer to the decay that everybody sees inside our society and inside our political apparatus, when you're open and not defensive of the relative luxurious life that we're still able to enjoy, and you're willing to face the facts, it's not that doesn't take that long to get to the bottom of this, does it?
No, it doesn't. As you've mentioned several times this evening, once your eyes are open to it, I spot it in small newspaper articles in the newspaper now.
Well, you know, I can pick up any newspaper, any mainstream newspaper in this country, and I can find on any day at least a couple sustainable development articles. And if you're reading any financing information, government financial stories, I can guarantee you that unless it's almost without exception, that it's got sustainable development objectives sitting behind it.
I don't doubt that. I'm hopeful that we've caught this in the early stages and that we'll be able to fight it back.
Well, now you've had some success. Can you give us some description of that?
Well, we have started to organize. I have an online newspaper because we couldn't depend on the local print papers to print real news. So I've been using that as a way of getting the word on that and some other issues out. And so we have been able to organize. We did have the AMCI people. Initially, they were voted in on a unanimous vote of the town council and the selectmen of the three communities. And now we've got two of the other communities, East Millinocket and Midway, are starting to back away from their commitment to this vision process.
So what you've done is influenced the decision makers, giving them information about what's behind the visioning process, and they're preparing to withdraw from that process. Is that the point?
Right. I won't claim credit for all of this to my, you know, for myself. A lot of the people in East Millinocket and Midway did their own homework, and you know, once information is out,
yes.
Once information is out, I don't think they can hold up to the truth. But they depend on controlling the newspapers. They depend on manipulating public opinion through any way that they can.
Oh, and they're very good at that, and they have unlimited funds with which to do it.
We now have a couple of our town councilmen and possibly a third one on board with realizing what's going on, what's being done to our community. So, yes, we've had some success.
Well, that's excellent. And, you know, if we have people in the listening audience, and I'm sure we do, who are decision makers, either elected or unelected, it's important for them to begin to understand what's at risk here. So that, because we need this fight being waged at every level of our society. We politely and with smiles provide the information, turn the lights on, and the guys who know what they're doing, they just don't stand up to that. They are like school bullies in the schoolyard when they come up and put their arm behind your back and say uncle. Well, as soon as you say uncle once, they're going to have your arm behind your back again and again. So you just have to stand to these guys, you know, keep your demeanor up and spread the information, and good people will start to stop doing nothing. Good people will get involved, and I think that's what you're telling us you're seeing in your general communities up in northern Maine.
That's exactly what we're seeing here. We still have a ways to go, but I think we've things are looking positive.
Well, good. We'll keep in touch, and I know people in Maine are looking at the Freedom21SantaCruz.net website, because we're trying to create information that will have applicability not just in our town but in your town.
Thank
you for calling in, and have a good tomorrow, because you're already there.
And you have a good evening.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Well, welcome back to Radio Liberty and the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show. We were going to have one more caller here tonight. That person is Lisa Rudnick, another director at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, but we're running a little late, so we're going to have Lisa with us next week, I'm sure. She's able to share with us. Well, gee whiz, here's Lisa, and we've got some time. So, Lisa, hello, are you there? Well, it's good to hear your voice. You know, Lisa is the person I'd say that probably better than anyone in our county understands the tremendous number of fingers of the Wildlands Project that are putting its putting its face here in our county. And we've had calls from around the country tonight, Lisa, of people who are experiencing and have come to understand and are organizing and often cases successfully organizing to change their local public policy and bring broader understanding of the sustainable development movement into their largely rural communities. Of course, our objective is to get this information to urban communities because it's coming their way next. Suburbanites will be attacked and urbanites will be crammed together in these new dense human settlements called smart growth programs. But Lisa, can you tell us a little bit about what you see going on here and speaking to the forest landowners and the farm landowners and the rural owners and in light of this rather compelling demonstration that it's happening across this country. And a lot of people in our town, like other places, have heard about Agenda 21 and sustainable development, but continue to keep their eyes closed to the reality of it. And what might you add about what's going on here in Santa Cruz and how we better wake up?
Right. You know, there's so much going on, it's almost hard to know where to start. But that would be my message, is for people to wake up. It's just incredible what's going on. A few years ago, our county board of supervisors, it's five people that govern the whole county, passed some zoning regulations. Many of the people weren't even notified that it was happening, except notified by persons like myself, who was trying to get the word out. And people didn't even know this was happening, but they basically got zoned out of their forest land. A good part of Santa Cruz County is forest land, really dense forest where you can't see the stars. It was clear cut around the turn of the century, except for some large parks that we reserved back in the early 1900s. And so for where every big tree was growing, there are now 10 little ones, and it's very dense and it's very high fire hazard. And people
let me interject. We only have a couple minutes here, but that is a condition we're seeing with government managed or regulated lands across the West. Welcome back to Radio Liberty. This is Michael Shaw, the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show, and we have on the line Santa Cruz resident Lisa Rudnick, who is a director of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. And Lisa's describing for us the unkempt forest conditions we have here in Santa Cruz because of heavy regulations. And we've seen this condition arise throughout the West and explode in devastating fires that wipe out ecological values, but even much more importantly, destroy human property and sometimes take human life. So, Lisa, clearly what we're going to be doing here is spreading the word locally and nationally about sustainable development, and Santa Cruz makes such an outstanding example because we're ahead of many places in the country, and so we're going to be able to tell you what's coming. And the best way to deal with that issue is to do what Lisa and the other participants at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz and a growing number of forest landowners and even the farmers here in Bajaro are starting to see through the facade that pretends to be helping them while they continue to see their farming rights dissipate. So in the next couple minutes, Lisa, what else might you say to us tonight here?
Well, I'd say people have been unable to manage their land through one regulation or another, and we're being set up for another catastrophe. I can already see smart growth coming. We have a draft housing element where they now have targeted what they call underutilized non-vacant parcels. So they want these parcels to be more densely built down in the area where they want the rail, the light rail, the solar rail, whatever they're going to end up having. These places, they want high-rise, dense development. They want the people out of the hills. They're doing it through a number of ways, zoning, habitat conservation plans, conservation easements, land grabs, water districts buying property, Semperviron's buying property. The UN now has a piece of property that my water district owned a few years ago. It's now on the UN list of protected area owned by the government.
Mm-hmm.
It's all around. It's so prevalent, and people don't want to see it. They don't want to believe it because it's so ugly.
Well,
it's here.
You know, Lisa, this is going to be like a wildfire. You know, when we hit a critical mass, it'll take off. But, you know, we're wrapping this show up, and Lisa, I suspect that we'll be hearing your voice on next week's Freedom 21 show. But I want to just let our listeners know that, you know, it's going to be a simple issue. We need to each face up to our own reality about what truly exists in the world here today. And we need to start fighting against sustainable development. We need to keep the American system of governance and in a free enterprise economic system and a justice system that relies on equal justice. And we need to know what we're fighting for, how we're fighting for individual liberty and a constitutional government and a justice system that treats us all as human beings. And to do this, we're going to have to, you know, follow a few practices. For instance, we can't underestimate our opponent. But the objective we have at every step is to spread truth. Joan, I want to thank you for being here, and it's your information, it's your knowledge that has become so honed, and with all the documents that you have so well understood and that you can get right to, nobody can stand up and say that this is a conspiracy theory if Joan Parros is in the room.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure to be here, and congratulations on this maiden voyage.
Well, We'll get a little practiced at it, and that ought to make things flow a little smoother. In future shows, we're going to have different participants from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz host this show and co-host this show, and we're going to look forward to communicating with to the best extent we can with any individual out there who wants to learn more about sustainable development, Agenda 21. But, you know, we all need to start with our children, and we need to be able to cause those children to understand that their school systems are really selling them a new bill of goods. And they're not getting the idea that government exists to protect our rights, not to take them. And this is something we're going to have to start reteaching those children who don't know, one at a time, by mom and dad, working with people in their neighborhoods and communities that they know who understand the principles of the American ideal, so that it's there for us, our children, and our posterity. These are great times with great risks. Let's advance freedom in the 21st century. And best to you tonight, and long live freedom.
God bless America. Good night.